Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville and Debbie Lassiter. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Today's topic is sleep as medicine. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU FM, 100.5 on your dial, and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Our subject today, sleep as medicine. Our guest expert is sleep specialist Dr. Roxanne Valentino. Lynn and Chuck Schumacher will join her to round out our panel. Great big welcome to you, our guests, and to you, our listeners. Now my monologue. Sometimes we forget that nature has as many cures as doctors, maybe more. Case in point, sleep is medicine. There are so many considerations when we talk about sleep. There's sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS, sleep terrors, sleepwalking, bedtime, school time, school start time, and the millions of things that we do that interfere with sleep. Many medications, late night exercise, lack of exercise come to mind. But the worst offenders are television, phones, computers, and video games. There's good research showing that these and tons of other electronic gadgets all affect sleep in a negative manner. Probably the reason that Rip Van Winkle was able to sleep 20 years was that neither he, his family, nor his neighbors had radios, televisions, or phones. Too often we overlook the important role sleep plays in mental and physical growth and development, learning, physical fitness, and just plain feeling better. Brain activity during sleep is essential to almost all mental and physical body functions, the consolidation of memories, learning, cognitive development, psychiatric health, immune function, fat deposition, as well as body growth and repair. One pediatric study found a robust association between poor sleep and a host of childhood problems. They concluded, quote, "Nearly every concern of parents and pediatricians can be brought on or exacerbated by inadequate sleep, from obesity to aggression to hyperactivity," end quote. The first brain function to suffer from inadequate sleep is the ability to plan, organize activity, and pay attention. Sleep really messes up learning. It messes up learning and behavior so badly that many parents, teachers, and unfortunately doctors confuse lack of sleep with ADHD and treat the child with stimulants. That doesn't make sense to me. Lack of sleep should be treated with more sleep, not with stimulants, which actually prevent sleep and make things worse. A recent study found that an addition of just 25 minutes of sleep was associated with improvement of school performance among adolescents. Since good sleep is a lifelong habit, improving children's sleep benefits them directly and has significant beneficial long-term impact on the nation's health and economy. Now, how do we get our kids and ourselves to sleep more? It's not easy, but it is possible. First, start with plenty of exercise during the day. Kids, like adults, should have at least 45 minutes of exercise 3 times a week, preferably out of doors. Second, end every day with quiet time, reading, conversations with family and friends, or a board game. Avoid television, computers, and all electronic screens for an hour before bedtime, as screen light stimulates the wake center and delays sleep onset. Of course, it goes without saying that kids as well as adults should not nap after 4 p.m. Third, save the bedroom for sleeping and changing clothes. I think this is so important. A bedroom is not a place for entertaining friends, doing homework, watching television, playing video games, texting, use a cell phone, or roughhousing with brothers, friends, or dad. These activities are all important, but should take place away from bedrooms. All electronic gadgets, including television, should be in the home's common area. as far away from the bedrooms as possible. 4, equally important is establishing regular times for going to bed and getting up. Kids should have their own alarm clocks and be responsible for setting the wake-up time and getting up without parents' help. This should be accomplished as soon as kids understand time. Kindergartners and first graders are so excited to go to school that it seems an ideal time to teach them the responsibility. Yet I know of several parents who make wake-up calls to their college kids. Can't imagine it. Make these changes, and you'll be surprised to find you have a wonderful, well-rested, well-behaved, smart child who is ready to learn, and by the end of a week, you'll see a big difference it makes in their lives and in yours. In my more than 40 years of taking care of kids as a pediatrician, a father, and grandfather, I know this formula works. Try it. You'll like it. So will your kids and the rest of your family. Now, what parent doesn't worry about sudden infant death syndrome? SIDS. Years ago, when I was a first-year medical student, I agreed to babysit my friend's infant baby. Like many new parents, I was worried this little sweet little angel would die of crib death, so I inadvertently woke her up at least 3 times during the evening to be sure she was still breathing. SIDS, also referred to as crib death, occurs without warning during sleep. It is the leading cause of death for infants between 1 month and 1 year of age. In 1994, the American Academy of Pediatrics and a number of other organizations began the Back to Sleep campaign. By 2010, the number of SIDS deaths was reduced from 4,700 to 2,063. And by 2014, only 1,545 babies died of SIDS. Now, I said only, but any baby's death is a tragedy of the worst kind. The focus of the Back to Sleep campaign was to encourage parents to put their babies to sleep on their backs. That was a hard sell for me because all of our own 4 babies and most of my patients' babies slept on their stomachs. But the research was undeniable, and the results above speak for themselves. There are other risk factors for SIDS, premature birth for one, but the most changeable risk factor is smoking. Paternal smoking, as well as maternal smoking during pregnancy and after, increases the risk of SIDS. To learn more about ways to reduce the risk of SIDS, visit their website, How Can I Reduce the Risk of SIDS? Now, there's so much more to say about sleep, so I want to introduce our guest expert, Dr. Valentino. Dr. Valentino is a graduate of the Ohio State University School of Medicine, did a residency in neurology and at the Cleveland Clinic Foundation, where she also did a fellowship in sleep medicine and neurophysiology. She is the medical director of St. Thomas Center for Sleep and sees patients there and in Hendersonville. She and her husband have 3 kids, ages 10 to 13. Welcome, Dr. Valentino, to Parenting Matters on WBOU-FM, 100.5 on your dial, and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. I am so excited to have you on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let me cut right to the chase. Do you think there is a connection between lack of sleep and ADHD, or am I way off the mark?
No, actually, I think you're right on the mark with the statements that you made. Most of us already know that when adults are tired, they tend to get sluggish, slow, and drowsy. They may even nod off during sedentary activities like reading, but toddlers and elementary school-aged children tend to do the opposite. They tend to display tiredness with hyperactivity, but both children and adults have inattentiveness as a consequence of tiredness. So in children, what we see is that tiredness then leads to both inattention and hyperactivity, and it really looks a lot like ADHD. I do believe that biological ADHD exists in some brains, but unfortunately, in a lot of cases, there are other factors, including sleep problems, that will mimic true ADHD.
I agree with you totally. Thank you so much. Now, another concern of mine is adolescent school start times. While delaying start times has shown to improve school performance, I'm concerned that this change will not be long-lasting, that it will cause their biological clocks to reset, and subsequently we will need to start school later every few weeks or months. What can you tell us about that?
So that's true. The term that we use for biological clock in the scientific community is circadian rhythm. Mm-hmm. And there is a natural shift in circadian rhythm during puberty for later drowsiness times and waking up times in the morning. So most teenagers, if left to their own devices, would go to bed later and sleep in later. The other part of it is that for most adults, our circadian rhythm is not exactly 24 hours. Actually, most adults have a rhythm that's slightly longer than that, maybe 22 or 24.2 hours. And so all of us, if we didn't do things to keep our rhythm in check, might vary over weeks, either slightly later in the day or slightly earlier in the day. So you're exactly right about that concern. For just kind of going along with our biological clock and not doing the measures to keep it in check. Luckily, there are some very simple daily activities that help keep our biological clock in check and can keep us on a strict 24-hour rhythm. And that includes waking up at a consistent time in the morning, regular meals, exercise, and exposure to light. And so while it's nice to accommodate teenagers and their shifting rhythms, we also have to be reasonable. And school administrators have very reasonable decisions that they have to make with scheduling and buses. So I do believe that it's important for children, teenagers, and their parents to do the healthy measures that they can to learn good sleep habits and to be able to take those into adult life as well.
Great. Thank you so much. You know, we have all observed high school kids attending sports practices at 5 in the morning. One of my sons had swim practice 5 days a week at 5 o'clock in the morning and no access to breakfast between practice and school. So inventive as kids are, they went out and bought electric grill and they made pancakes in the locker room every morning after practice before school started. Now that seemed brutal to me, to the notion. But I think it conditioned them to the notion that sacrifice is required for success. Now, do you think school starting at 8:30 and I makes wimps of our teens? Are we treating symptoms instead of looking at the causes?
Well, that's an interesting discussion. And those do sound like very motivated kids waking up for swim practice. So they're certainly to be applauded. One thing that I think is important for teens and parents to be aware of is that sleep deprivation is not something that we can get better at by training. I sort of think of it like the body, like bleeding as a function. So if I were going to have surgery and wanted to bleed less, I couldn't cut myself multiple times before the surgery to train my body to bleed less. It would still bleed the same amount. The same thing is actually true for sleep deprivation. We can't get around the effects of it by training harder at it or doing it more often. So that under the situation of sleep deprivation, we all will suffer the effects when we're sleep deprived, regardless of how much we've tried to quote unquote train ourselves for it. We do know that some humans seem to be more resistant to the effects of sleep deprivation, and some tend to be more at risk under the same circumstance of sleep deprivation. And so some of that is biological, but ultimately, if we're sleep deprived, we all will have some negative effects in terms of our ability to function during the day. So teenagers and their parents really need to understand that if they're going to get up in the morning because they're highly motivated to do certain activities, then they just need to plan their bedtimes accordingly to make up for that.
Well, I remember when I was in high school, we always went to bed at 9:30. Not because we had motivation to get up, but our dad had motivation to get those cows
true.
Milked.
That goes a long way.
You know, I want to bring in our special guest, I mean our guest couple now, because Chuck is an athletic trainer, and he's really a true Renaissance man, having achieved excellence as an author, professional musician, cabinet maker, certified personal trainer, baseball coach, and a martial artist. He is the author of a parenting young athletes book, How to Play Baseball, A Parent's Role in Their Child's Journey. He is the owner of Chuck's Gym in Franklin. Now, Lynn also has an interesting career. She mentioned this at the start of our show. She is a transportation broker. Clients give her truckloads of freight, and she finds truck drivers to take the load from point A to point B. They have one granddaughter and two terrific kids. The daughter is a nurse midwife, and their son is manager of a nightclub and restaurant in Las Vegas. Welcome, Lynn and Chuck, to Parenting Matters on WBOU-FM 100 on your radio dial and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Thank you for coming. I hope you found this afternoon's discussion interesting.
It's very good. Appreciate you having us here.
Thank you very much.
Lynn, you told me before the show that your dad was in the Air Force and you attended 20 schools in many states and foreign countries before you were in 12th grade. How were you able to adjust to these different time zones?
Well, we were fortunate that the Air Force moved my father when school was normally out during recess. So we had plenty of time to get ready for the next school year. And as kids, we're resilient, so we were always kept the same time as far as getting up and going to bed. But we were acclimated to the time zone mm-hmm. already. So.
Well, that would, according to my math, which is my wife tells me isn't that good, that would only give you 11 chances to move because there's only 11 vacations. But how did you manage to get squeezed in 20 schools?
Well, just for example, my junior year, I started it in the Philippines. We moved to Pennsylvania to live with my grandmother, so we had to continue school. Mm-hmm. You don't get to move. Your father might have to go on to his destination, but the government doesn't provide housing for mm-hmm. your family right mm-hmm. away. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we went to Pennsylvania, and when he got the house in Topeka, Kansas, we then had to move from Pennsylvania to Topeka. So I finished my junior year in Topeka. So my junior year alone was three different schools.
I don't know how many time zones there are between the Philippines and Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, but I do know between Pennsylvania and
Topeka,
Kansas.
Topeka, yeah.
There's one change. Did you make you flunk out? Were you not able to get up in the morning?
I don't recall. I mean, I think growing up as a child, we were always, it was just normal for us. Mm-hmm. It wasn't mm-hmm. unusual. I mean, our lifestyle, along with all the other children that we went to school with, it was normal.
So actually you're saying that people are adaptable.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Chuck, would you say something about how sleep deprivation affects athletes?
Sure. I think some of the best examples I could think of is we have a saying in martial arts that is goes like, the body follows the mind. Body always follows the mind. So to be consistent as an athlete, you know, you have to keep a calm mind in the face of competition. Or if you get too aggressive, the mind is too stimulated, the body will overreact. But so the object is to keep the mind sharp. If you're not sleeping, you may feel tired physically, but you can kind of still make it happen. You can still do stuff. You can still do some physical work. You could, you know, move some boxes or whatever. But if you're trying to do something that requires fine motor skills and your mind is tired, it's just probably not going to really work out. You're going to be very average at it. A good example would be my martial arts students who spend several years, you know, 5-6 years of constant training on precision skills to get to the point where they can test for black belt. So I often tell them, I said, you're basically passing that test each time you come in here over these years. And by the time it's time for the black belt test, you've pretty much passed it. You just need to show up and put on a show.
Do it.
But you can fail. If you walk through the door and I detect that you're half asleep because you stayed up and party last night, I'll probably just call the test off. because you're not going to pass. Mm-hmm. And that's because of tired mind. Mm-hmm. Even though your skills are so sharp, but it's not going to be good enough.
Do you talk to your students about sleep?
Yes, I do. Because it's a crucial rest for the body. The muscles need rest, so does the mind. I teach baseball, which, of course, one of the most notable things is pitchers. Why do you think in the big leagues they have pitch counts and the pitchers only pitch every 5 days? And, you know, they've got a big investment to protect. These arms, can only take so much. And overuse injuries now are at epidemic levels with kids being overused, and travel teams are so predominant, and some parents have their kid in the travel team and the rec team, and it's just overuse. So the muscles wear out, so they need rest, and sleep is a big part of it. You can't just keep working and working and get 4 or 5 hours of sleep, but so many kids are so tied up in so many things now that could be happening. Mm-hmm. You have to recuperate.
You have to have time just to be a kid, too.
Well, and then there's that, and that's the mm-hmm. mental state. Mm-hmm. So that's a whole another show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, so, yeah, yeah.
Don't get me going on that one. So,
can we talk just a little bit about alarm clocks? What age, Lynn, did you start? Kids start getting up with their own clock? 30?
Yeah, our kids were unusual.
No. As Shelley... As a girl, and it seems like girls tend to be more adaptable and be more organized, I should say. Or I found my daughter.
Sexist.
Yeah, yeah. There he was. She probably started in middle school using her own mm-hmm. alarm clock. Mm-hmm. Our son, because we, very early on, as you mentioned, our kids, we never put TVs in their rooms. They didn't have telephones in their rooms. They didn't have computers in their rooms. We had a central area in the house where that's where they did all of their, mm-hmm. As far as schoolwork mm-hmm. and that. But our son was always a big athlete, and he wanted to watch ESPN SportsCenter. I mean, he fell asleep to SportsCenter, but the only way he could do that was by sleeping on the couch. We have a bird that would hear me every morning, Philip, get up. And to this day, that bird still says, Philip, get up, every morning at the same time.
It's his best word.
And that was Philip's alarm clock. Was the bird.
All day long now we hear, Philip,
get up.
So, Dr. Roxanne?
I think my oldest child, who's a girl, probably mm-hmm. started around second grade mm-hmm. with her alarm clock. Mm-hmm. And then the two after her are in pretty close succession. So then the youngest one wanted to do everything her older siblings were doing, so she may have started a little bit earlier. But around by second grade, mm-hmm. I would say. And so right now they're grades 8, 6, and 4. And occasionally we'll have to check and make sure that they're all up in the morning. But they're all pretty good about mm-hmm. getting up on their own. It really is habit training. Yeah. My son's first alarm clock, actually, and he's 11 now, it was a Lightning McQueen alarm clock, so it was like this revving of an engine sound. And finally, last summer, he said, I'm 11, I think I should get a different alarm clock because this one is made for little kids.
Well, it's good for him. See, he's growing up. So they're growing
right.
up. And that's one of the things we have to do is help our kids grow up.
When people are sleep deprived, one thing that slows is reaction speed. And so this goes along with what Chuck was talking about with athletes and being able to do these fine motor skills. But reaction speed really slows. And so in some studies, sleep deprivation then was about equivalent to drunken driving in terms of slowed reaction mm-hmm. speeds. And so it really is a very serious safety issue, especially in children whose judgment zones in their brain are not developed enough yet to make decisions on whether they're impaired to drive or not. So you couple the lack of judgment with the slowed reaction speeds from sleep deprivation and also with inexperience in terms of driving, and then it really becomes multiple factors all adding up.
You know, I can't believe it's already time to wrap this up. It's been that fast. I'm sorry, I have so much more I want to talk about. And Chuck, can I invite you to be a guest on our show in the future and talk about parenting athletics?
Oh, that'd be great. I'd love to do it.
Good. We'll talk about it later. Well, it's been a great pleasure talking with all of you and with our guests and with our listeners. Before I sign off, one quick story. Some years ago, one of my sons and his wife went away for a short weekend and left their son, a high school senior, home. Late on Sunday afternoon, we received a call from our son. "Have you seen Joe?" he asked. We talked to him about 8 o'clock last evening, and he was on his way home. We're getting concerned because we called him several times this morning, and he hasn't answered. Could you and Mom drive over there and see if everything's okay? Well, my heart skipped a beat and my stomach churned, but I thought, remain calm. So I said, "I wouldn't worry about Joe. He's such a good kid. I'm sure he's okay. But we'll go over there and check, see what's up. Call you back." Well, Mary and I drove over there all the time, encouraging each other that everything was going to be okay, but my stomach still ached. Driving up the driveway, all I could do to keep my eyes dry and my stomach from showing the world my lunch. We reached the front door. I pressed the doorbell, and we waited to see if Joe would answer. He did not. But in a minute, his oldest brother, a senior at a nearby college, let us in. He had stopped over to get some things and said Joe was not there. He said, "I've been here since mid-morning, and there's no one home. I heard the phone ring a couple times, but I don't live here, so I didn't answer it." "I'm going upstairs to check his bed," I said, "just to be sure." I rushed up the stairs 2 steps at a time. Then, holding my breath, I said a prayer and opened his bedroom door. There, comfortably sleeping, was Joe. He woke up when I approached his bed. "Grandpa," he says, "what are you doing here?" Then he looked at his alarm clock and continued, "It's 6 o'clock. Shouldn't you still be home sleeping?" I says, "Joe, it's 6 in the evening." "It can't be. I didn't go to bed till 9. What's wrong? Why are you here, really?" He says, "Joe, believe me, it's Sunday evening. Your folks called us to come and see if you were okay. They said they tried to call you, but you didn't answer. I'm just so glad you're okay." And I gave him a big hug. "Looks like I slept almost 24 hours," he said. "I knew I was tired, but not that tired." Point of the story, teens need lots of sleep. Now here's your homework. Sit down with your family and go to my website, www.parenting-matters.com, and click on audio blog and listen to today's show with them. Then review your family's sleeping habits. Go back to the website and tell us what changes you plan to make and how you'd like the show. And if you'd like to be a guest on Parenting Matters, attach a short bio and tell us what you would like to talk about. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue, brought to you by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Listen for Parenting Matters Sunday mornings at 8:30 a.m. and Tuesdays and Thursday mornings at 11:30 a.m. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thank you for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.